Rick, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with the problem. I've got an F650GS.
Yeah.
Manufacturing date 6 of 2000, so it's before they made the modifications.
Okay.
And the dealer, my dealer in Houston,
okay,
shipped me a new computer and a new injector,
okay,
to Hawaii, and I had it installed by a BMW qualified mechanic there.
Okay.
And it did fix, I would say, 80 to 85% of the problem. In other words, the stalling problem that I had went away. But the bike was virtually unrideable. Yeah, it was really bad. And so the stalling problem went away, and a lot of the surging problem went away, but I still have, I'm not sure that I would characterize it as a surge. It feels more like a miss to me, but I still have a power disruption at between 2,500 and 4,000 RPM in any gear.
Okay.
And and it feels, you know, I'm an old two-stroke single rider, and in a two-stroke single, it feels like a misfire. You know, you get this kind of hesitation, and it occurs every second or two.
Yep. So it's kind of an oscillating, kind of comes and goes.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's worse on some rides than it is on other rides. It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's most annoying. You know, I bought this bike to basically to ride around town. There's not much cruising you can do on an island, right?
Yeah, you bet.
And so most of my riding is at 35, 40 miles an hour.
If you
run this bike at 3,500 RPM in third or fourth gear, you get this almost as regular as clockwork. You get this consistent something, miss, surge, whatever you call it.
Okay.
And it's very annoying. I mean, it's annoying enough that I'm going to get rid of the bike if I can't fix it.
I'm sure what you're experiencing is the leanness that we find in almost all of the BMWs, and it does actually vary from bike to bike, and I think it's a combination of how well the O2 sensor, or how clean it is, how well it reads, and how everything kind of relates to each other. But as I explained to David earlier today, what happens is, and the F650GS has fundamentally a different Motronic system in the way that it operates from the oil head twins, which is how we first started with this product. But the O2 sensor is what we call closed loop. Well, it's at idle, and as you open the throttle up, so closed loop means that it takes the primary signal comes from the oxygen sensor, and adjusts, and an oxygen sensor reads between 3.1 and 4% sealed. If it varies higher or lower than that, which is a very good reading, and will give you a good smooth idle. What happens is once you open the throttle, the TPS switch takes over. It open loops, which means it ignores what the O2 sensor is telling you, and the MAP sensor, which is manifold air pressure, manifold air vacuum sensor, takes over. The problem that occurs is until there's enough load on the bike, the MAP sensor's got nothing to read.
Right.
You know, at light load, like you said, at 35 mile an hour in third gear, you're in a very light load situation. The motor's not getting load, so it's not creating a lot of engine vacuum. So what happens is the fuel injection, the ECU, or the MAP, it goes lean. It doesn't know where to go, so it goes lean. And until you get on the throttle, which creates vacuum, you know, manifold pressure, then the fuel comes in and the bike runs fine.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense to me, because I actually live in a fairly hilly area.
Yeah.
And the bike never surges on a hill at 35 miles an hour.
Because you got to load. And that gets played to Dave. And I'm not sure, the GS is a little different than the twins. But the twins, I mean, you know, I'm personally convinced that the Motronic system is basically an automotive system. It's designed for a 3,000-pound car. Well, in this light load, between idle and load, in a car, you go through that in, you know, hundredths of a second, because you're trying to move 3,500 pounds. In a motorcycle where you're trying to move 500 pounds, you know, the thing will go down the road, you know, in say in third gear, 30 mile an hour, in a very light load situation, and that's why you're this running. And I mean, the surge, as it's described, is really what it is. It's an amplification of just, you know, the motor, like, because there's not enough fuel, the motor, it's not getting a good enough signal. It just kind of, you know, it doesn't know what to do, so it just kind of lopes along.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, and then, of course, I mean, you could do the same thing with, I mean, any your car, your, you know, Japanese bike, anything. You make the things lean enough, they hunt, because there's just not enough fuel there for them to, or signal to lock onto. So we've had really good success with our box, because what we do is we just add enough fuel at a, you know, we wait till about 1800 RPM.
Right.
We don't add any fuel at idle, because the O2 sensor, the catalytic converter, all those things are there and they work fine. The minute the thing open loops, which is at around 1900 RPM, that when it falls lean, that's when we go in and we add fuel. And you'd almost have to have a box in front of you, you know, or have it on a bike, and I could show you how the lights flip, and we have these little LED lights that tell you exactly what's happening. But what we do is we wait, we get above idle, get around 1700-1800 RPM, then we start adding fuel. And we only add enough fuel to come back to that 3%, 3.1 to 4% CO, but the bike was getting at idle. So all we do is we take this dead area, the area of kind of what I call it, like no man's land, because there's no fuel. The fuel injection just isn't delivering anything, because there's no signal to tell it to deliver anything.
Right.
That we just go in there and we add fuel. Now, as you accelerate and you go into a load and the map sensor comes in, the amount of fuel that's then added by the ECU is fairly significant, and that's why your surge goes away, and the amount of fuel we added disappears, in a sense that it's such a small amount in relation to what is being added that it doesn't really affect, you know, the fuel economy or any of those issues. And the signal, just like I said, has the map. Because what we do is we deal with pulse width. The actual electrical signal, the electronic signal that runs down the wire from the ECU to the injector, that tells the injector how long to stay open,
right,
to deliver its fuel, we tap onto that wire, and we just hold that. We just add on to the tail end of that signal. So we just hold the injector open, you know, longer. And
right,
we're talking about milliseconds.
Right.
But, you know, so you understand, I mean, we're down around, you know, almost nanoseconds. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, tenths of milliseconds where we're adding. So we don't add a lot. We do everything with a CO machine, with a gas analyzer. So we're looking at mixture, because we know what percentages of CO the mixture, you know, the motor wants and is required to make it run smoothly. And we just go in there and give it that. Our boxes are adjustable, so that if you made a change, I mean, if your bike's stock now and at some date in the future you want to pull off the stock catalytic converter and put a stain tune on or a remus or something like that, then you could go back in and readjust for that change in back pressure and in, you know, freer flow in stock. Like, we send them out, you know, at our base setting. And on the F650 GF, our base setting seems to be right on the money. I mean, it seems to be, you know, a real nice, you know, smooth, you know, and like I said, I'm sure David, we've had responses, email responses back directly, probably from half a dozen people we've sold them to on the GS, and also pulled some letters off the Chain Gang website. But just a couple of little things here. That I can read you here. I was actually just compiling this for somebody else. This is for an F650 GS. Put on the fuel manny on Monday. You know, our box fuel economy, the fuel mileage is identical. He says, it pulls like a tractor from as little as 2,000 RPM, though I do not try to lug it that low on a regular basis. It seems to have more mid-range and revs out faster. To be sure, it feels faster to 90 mile an hour than ever before. I have tried over and over to cause it to surge. It was always a chore from 3,100 to 4,100 RPM before. but is now without any surging whatsoever. He says, the bike has run flawlessly since the installation. I feel like I should pinch myself.
Yeah, I actually, both David and I read the Chang Yang message.
Sure. Well, that's just one of them, and like I said, we've got...
Well,
here's another guy that emailed us directly. He goes, on an F650, unbelievable. That's all I could think of to say. After much lost sleep and the return of an ulcer, I was at a wit's end. This is not the same motorcycle I rode last week. Silky smooth. Seamless power delivery. It's the best $150 I have spent in a long, long time.
Great. Well, John, where, after the conversation you've had here with Rick, where do you think you stand? I mean, that phone call that came in, Rick, was Jimmy Lewis.
Okay.
And what he would like to do is get a unit to test at Cycle World, because they have an S650 there that continues to experience problems, and they sent it back to BMW numerous times.
Okay.
So I'd like to maybe...
It'd be a great place to send one.
Well, the thing is that what I'd like to do is, Rick, if we can get John and Jimmy some test units...
Sure. Okay.
You know, I'd like to arrange that so that we can, you know, tackle this. Because John's problem is unique. I mean, he's in Hawaii.
Yeah, it's a hassle.
It's a real big hassle.
But I tell you, I mean, the instructions that come with this thing, I mean, honestly, you can put the box on the bike in 5 minutes.
Well, I have a really good mechanic there. I have a guy who runs a BMW-only car service.
Oh, sure.
Thing, but he's a bike rider.
Yeah. Great.
So he owns his own bikes and
well, if he's a car, like I said, if
he says incidentally that this injection system looks exactly like the M3 injection system.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the installation that I saw here in New York today was pretty easy. It's I think as Rick's probably told you, an inline splice. You put the little additional control unit on top of it,
right.
Velcro, and it's you ground it and you're good to go with the adjustment. So
it's we use 3M Scotch lock connectors. So you know the thing is at any point, I mean it's reversible. You can take it off if you want to take it off. But we haven't, you know, with GS 650 GSs, we've got a bike here that with a stain tune, we modified the air intake snorkel to get a little bit more air. We picked up 8 horsepower at 7 foot pounds of torque. I mean, the bike makes 20% more horsepower and 20% more torque than it was when it arrived here.
Wow.
I mean, it's pretty substantial. Like I said, I could email you the dyno graph if you wanted to see it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a drivability issue. I mean, the bonus, like I said, from a performance point of view, if you go to a stain tune, if you want to make some changes to your airbox, the box, it's a full function box. It's fully adjustable. You can make any change that you'd like to change, but you know we like sending them out exactly the way they are, because that way it's a minimum setting. The box, so you know, it runs on a millivolt system, so that it there's no way that it can harm your stock system. If the thing ever shorted out or ever had a problem, it would just stop functioning. There's no way. It's such a small draw. It can't hurt your stock system.
Well, I mean, I think John, if you're willing to give it a go,
I'm eager to give it a go. I'd love to try it.
Okay, great. So I'll tell you what. Why don't I'm going to actually stop the recording, because I think we got a lot of good technical sessions.
Well, before you stop it, let me ask one other technical question.
Sure, John.
If it's an oxygen sensor issue, essentially, the problem here.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't, because, like I said, the oxygen sensor it only closed loops at an idle.
Okay, right.
And where it closed loops and the oxygen sensor functions, the bike runs fine. I mean, it idles fine. I think you'd agree that the thing sits there and idles fine. The fact is, it's this no man's land in the fuel map, in the ECU map, between the oxygen sensor and the map sensor, where there's just no signal.
Okay, so the question I was going to ask is it possible that that's affected by humidity and altitude?
It will somewhat. What you have to realize is that all fuel injection systems have an air density sensor, which measures altitude, it measures barometric pressure. It doesn't measure humidity, though. Humidity from like literally zero humidity to 100% is only a 3% variance. If, you know, through FAE, if you look at the correction factors for air when you're running on a dyno, I mean, there's an FAE standard. There's only a 3% range. So, but no question that from no humidity to 100% humidity may affect the surge, because it's a borderline issue. Like you said, I mean, the CO in this no man's land is down around 1%.
Yeah.
If you can get the thing up to 1.7-1.8%, you know, the surge will probably would go away. We go up to about, you know, say two. We try to get in around 2.5, but it's kind of like it's a borderline deal. Like, so it's kind of like if you're walking along trying to keep balance on a railway tie or something.
Right.
You know, you're on a balancing edge. If anything, humidity, barometric pressure, you know, if the range of the stock sensor isn't perfect, can make it worse on some days and better on other days.
Right.
But
well, I was just wondering, my location at sea level in Hawaii, where it's warm and humid, whether that was one of the reasons why I happened to have the problem.
No. And even Dr. David, we have the problem everywhere.
Everywhere.
I mean, we have the problem in Norway. We have, you know, people have emailed us. I mean, the East Coast, I mean, Florida, we sell a lot of components down into Florida,
right.
You know, South Carolina. I mean, we got real heat here in Las Vegas. But, you know, we run in a diner room where we control humidity levels. We can control, you know, ambient temperatures. And the sensors do a fine job. I mean, your air density sensor, your air temperature sensors, because it's technology that was developed over the last 20 years on their automotive side.
Right.
We find generally the sensors themselves that are used, both with BMW and with other motorcycle manufacturers, have a very good range and are quite good. You know, like I said, you know, you need to make more of a change to eliminate this problem than, like I said, the swing from low humidity to high humidity.
Right.
It really isn't the issue. I mean, that, like I said, it's just, to go back to saying it again, it's that no man's land between the O2 sensor closed loop and the MAP sensor, which is a load sensor. In between there's just no signals, so the ECU just doesn't give any fuel.
Great. And then for the record, as we wrap up this conversation, Rick, if you could give somebody just your summary background as to what your experience has been, where you came from, what we talked about in our previous conversations with people who are listening to this.
We know he came from Canada.
Well, of course, I know he came from Canada, except for...
Yeah, my partner in this business, Mark Dobek, started Dynojet Research back in 1982, and all the jet kits that K&N, Cobra, Kirker, I mean, all the really almost all the jet kit technology and concept came from Mark. The Dynojet Dyno, if you know what the inertia dynos for measuring horsepower, those all came from Mark. He sold the company in '96. And we've just started this new venture in February of this year with the fuel injection, because what we saw with the existing fuel injection modules, which is being made by his old company, just weren't functioning and weren't doing the job. So
exactly.
We come up with our little box.
But what you also said, Rick, that I think is also interesting for people to know is also your professional experience in with BMW motorcycles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also, if you could relate some of the other issues that you found from the design of the BMW fuel delivery system that we talked about in our previous conversation.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that will make a nice closing statement, and then we can end the recording.
Okay, John. Yeah, I mean, when I came down from Canada, I was the service manager at the largest BMW motorcycle dealership in Canada. We were selling about 150, 160 BMWs a year. And about 10% of them that they sold, or 10% of the number they sold every year, were being traded back in because, you know, the customers were unhappy with the surging. Most of it were oil head twins. But, you know, we just couldn't, you know, make the customers happy with their bike, and they would ultimately, you know, go back to their salesman or back to the owner of the store and say, I don't want this bike, trade it back in, and we couldn't fix it. We would phone BMW and just, you know, they would say throttle sink, and we did that to death and couldn't solve it. So when I came down here to Mark and we started doing Japanese bikes, I brought up the BMW issue. We brought a bike in, and, you know, with 20-some years experience, 25 years experience in fuel management,
you know, both carburetor and fuel injection and motorcycle. We put it on a dyno with a soft gas analyzer and oscilloscope, and the problem just kind of leaped out at us. That, you know, there we are, and we have just applied our technology that we developed for the Japanese and Harley-Davidson motorcycles, and pinpointed that problem, added the fuel where we needed to add the fuel with our box, and you know, away we went. We went up to Oregon and started putting boxes on people's motorcycles and, you know, getting feedback. And like I explained to David this morning, was, you know, I think fundamentally the Motronic unit that they're using is an automotive-based unit that is designed to drive a, you know, a 3,000-pound car. And,
right.
And the map sensor doesn't come in. I mean, the Japanese are the opposite. They use the map sensor, the manifold sensor, to set the low-speed map, the no-load map, and then they use throttle position to set the high-speed, where the BMW is just on the reverse, which would be fine in an automotive application where you've got that mass, you've got 3,500, 4,500 pounds of weight that you're trying to move. You know, you're either idle or you're on load. There's no in-between.
Right.
Well, where with a motorcycle, you know, you have in-between, I mean, literally all the time. You know, especially in-town driving, which is, you know, where most people are struggling with. Like you say, you get on the hills, you get on the highway, you're bucking a headwind, or, you know, you're up to 60 miles an hour, you've got enough wind resistance, the bikes run fine. So that's just kind of, you know, my look at it. And it's just, you know what I mean? But the feedback that I've had from the people that where we fixed the product, it just this seems to reconfirm that.
Great. Gentlemen, listen, I thank you for both your time. I'm going to turn off the recording so we can get the product out to John and Jimmy Lewis for testing, and
okay,
we'll wrap
if
up.
If you want to give me your address,